thing, and there we go. So, I just messed that up, didn't I?
Starting off on a good foot.
Oh, gosh. Aren't we always? Aren't we always? 602-508-0960. Sitting next to me is my daughter, Andy Salem. And she works at the shop with her brother, Alan, which is it's kind of a pain, isn't it? He's not listening, so you can say whatever you want.
No, it's good.
It's good what?
It's good working with them.
Okay, all right.
We're a good team.
Do you ever go in and consult with them?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
And is it has to do with everything involving the business?
Yes.
Okay, all right. And so, like, what kind of decision did the two of you make recently? Did it involve a vendor, a customer, an employee, what brand of parts we're going to sell?
All of the above, okay. Really. I mean, it's just a kind of a daily back and forth, you know, his input. Ideas I have, how we can execute them, all sorts of stuff.
So, which one of you is me and which one of you is my mother?
Oh, I'm definitely you.
Okay, so, because with your mother, as you well know, it's always been Snow White and Jack the Ripper. So, if you get called into her office, I've said 100 million times before, you're going to get a hug, a kiss, yeah, or a raise. If you get called into my office, it ain't good.
Yeah. So no, it's good. I mean, we work really well together.
Okay. But most of the staff we have now has been with us for years and years and years.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's not really staff issues or even issues per se. It's just, things, maintenance or just things that we have to get done or, how we're going to do things. Our big project is the car wash at the moment. We're painting it and did some block seal and concrete work, so we've just kind of been working through that.
We? Is there a frog in your pocket?
Yeah.
Tell me who the we is.
Well, I plan it, set it all up, find the people who are doing the work, and then they have been doing a great job.
Who's the we I'm talking about? We.
Alan. Alan's the...
The E on the TH?
Yeah.
The answer is we've had our car wash. It's a 4-bay self-service car wash, mm-hmm, attached to our property.
Yeah.
And it's been... We put it in service in 1994. And in 1994, it was called Salem Boys Car Wash. And now, Andy, not too long ago, put all new signage throughout the entire facility. And I came to work one day, and the car wash didn't say Salem Boys Car Wash anymore. It said Salem Girls Car Wash.
Yes.
And so I walked into her office, and I said, are we going to have girls in cheerleading outfits on weekends, or what are we going to have?
And all of Alan's friends. Yeah. That's the only people that said that.
So now... Since 1994, you're painting it.
We've painted it since then, but we haven't painted it in the last probably 5 to 10 years.
Okay, so you're painting it.
Mm-hmm.
The block work?
Yeah, doing just block seal.
Okay.
Just to help it, repel the water and stuff like that, seals the block better.
And then you just did a whole bunch of concrete.
Yep, some concrete that was just breaking up and just, regular maintenance type stuff.
But all new signage?
Yeah, we did a lot of new signs and just kind of refreshed, changed out the mat hooks, did fresh mat hooks. If there was, the brush holders were a little bit wobbly or okay, not, all the way tight, then we tightened up, just kind of fine-tune it all.
Okay, the mat hooks are really these big clothespins that we attach to the vertical poles that hold up the sunscreens, mm-hmm, and they can put their mats, they can wash their mats, and then they can put them in these big clothespins to dry them.
Yeah, there's ones on the poles in the detail area and then in the bays as well.
And the detail area is where you pull forward from the car wash and you go in and you have your own little bay and it's shaded and all that stuff.
Yeah.
So we have a vacuum there and we have other smell good stuff and all that stuff, but you're talking about these clips where the people, if they wash their mats while they're washing their car, they can hang them up and kind of dry them there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And then you have signage. I guess you're just going crazy on the signage.
Well, in general, signage and labels is a thing in the Salem world. So,
oh, so it's someone else's fault?
No, it's not someone else's fault because I have continued this for years after learning from you. But, there's a little bit of label OCD issues, and I'm not blaming anyone because I'm very much like that, but okay. It's so funny. One of the texts that was kind of newer at the time was like, wow. There's a lot of notes and labels all over. It's like, yeah, well, we want to make sure you know what's going on and where everything goes. And
no, you're right. You're right. It
organizes your life.
Well, not only that, it's when you walk into the room, the equipment room, it has these, all this pumps and tanks and electric motors and filters and all that kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And so there was times where you'd go in and work on the soft water system, but it was really you were working on the other part of the water system, and you thought you were on the soft water system.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And then all the, you know, when they come to service the soft water system, or the RO system and all of that, you know, they're talking about, oh, well, the membrane has to be changed. Oh, this has to be changed. And if you don't know what part they're even talking about,
right?
Because there's, you know, quite a few parts to it, then how do you know what got replaced, when it got replaced? So you can bet your bottom dollar there's a lot of labels in that room.
So you actually, now when you do the labels, I never tore off the old one, so I had some kind of spacing. So I did this one in January of 88. Mm-hmm. And the one before that I did in March of the year before. So I'm thinking, okay, I'm on about a year schedule here. So yeah. I just kept doing the labels. Do you guys rip off the old one and put the new one on?
Yeah, or I'll just put, you know, I put the intervals that they need to be replaced, whether it's yearly, 6 months, things like that. And then I put when the last time it was changed.
Okay. All right, so we take city water and we make it soft water. Mm-hmm. And then we also take city water and make it RO water, mm-hmm. which is the spot-free water. Mm-hmm. And we spray the spot-free water in the bays for the RO rinse, spot-free mm-hmm. rinse.
Yes.
And we also use, that's all we use it for is the spot-free rinse. Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's a real clean water.
Yeah.
It doesn't leave you know, deposits and stuff. Yeah. Okay, we have a caller, and this is an automotive show. You're on your own. I'm going to go with Mom, so you're on your own. Who's on the phone, Gil?
Say hello to Chris.
Chris, good morning.
Hey, Mark, how's it going?
Good, thank you.
I'm going to put a radiator in my car, and without saying names, should I use a Frank Zappa brand, or should I use a Shaquille O'Neal brand, if you know what I mean?
No, go ahead and do the brands. No one's going to care.
O'Reilly's or Napa.
Okay. I want to tell you, I would really, really, really shop price.
Okay, there's a difference of $10.
Okay.
And O'Reilly's carries gates and Napa doesn't. O'Reilly's gives 1 year, Napa gives lifetime. So, I mean, it's like, it's crazy.
Okay.
I mean, Gates is a good brand.
Yeah, absolutely.
But a lifetime warranty, if you're doing the labor, I mean, that's a good deal, too. So I'd probably do that.
And Dan, let me tell you that there's maybe two or three radiator companies in the world, and so it's really, that's why I want you to shop price on this particular part, because we do too. Okay, we do too. And but then when you get to the warranty part, obviously one's better than the other.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing on the lifetime warranty, you might want to verify what kind of documentation do they need. Because it's sometimes in fine print in that stupid thing, not on the one you're talking about, but on others I've seen, it says you must prove a annual flush, which means you go buy a gallon of coolant annually and you keep the receipt in that file.
Gotcha.
You know, so
okay.
So
that's
and
a great idea.
Yeah, or just ask them. You know, what is needed for a warranty? You know, do you remove the old radiator and bring it back? Do they need pictures? Do they need, you know, what kind of documentation if you were to have an issue?
Gotcha. Fantastic. Thank you very much for your help.
Just one other thing. When we talk about the four auto parts store that serve the retail market, so we got AutoZone, we got NAPA, we got CarQuest. Who else we got? There's four.
O'Reilly's.
Yeah. Thank you very much for that. We actually have accounts at each one of those because we find it convenient to go buy a can of flat black paint and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we are patronizing those guys, but we also buy hubcaps and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
We're not buying any of our what we call hard parts, under the hood parts.
Gotcha.
We're buying those from a warehouse. And we're buying substantially less than we can buy them there. And so Andy can mark them up times three.
Gotcha.
They can't see your face.
I know. They just heard my expression.
Yeah, that's exactly right. All right, Chris. Thank you very much. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
You bet. And people actually do think that we're buying the part for a dollar and selling it for 30.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing could be further from the truth.
Yeah, and I'll give you an example. A guy called about brakes being installed. He had his own brake pads and things like that. And he wanted, you know, us to install them. And we just had a conversation. I said, there's no warranty on, we can't provide a warranty on a customer installed parts. We don't, you know, do that. And so he said, oh, it's no problem. I've got a warranty through the parts store.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, but the parts store is not going to pay the labor for us to replace them the second time when they're squeaking or something's wrong with them, if there is, you
right.
know? And so he was like, oh, okay, because I think people just get in that mindset. You know, like that gentleman, he's doing it himself. That's one thing. But if you're having a shop do it,
yeah.
And they're focused on, oh, well, the part has a warranty and this and that. But what my point was is going into the markup, you have a markup because we provide a warranty
right.
with that markup for the parts and the labor.
So the a synopsis kind of, you can take your own, you can ask your shop to put your parts on, but it doesn't come with a labor installation because
no.
part of the profit is not only the profit on the labor, but it's the profit on the part.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to provide labor warranty on a part that we installed.
Mm-hmm.
So if your alternator fails in 90 days or 2 days before the year anniversary, there's no labor associated mm-hmm. with the place. That's why we typically, unless you have a customer and you've been a customer since Fred Flintstone did business with us, we're not likely to do that kind
yeah,
of stuff.
Yeah, and it's different. I mean, I have a set of wiper blades. Can you throw them on there on my passenger front seat? Yes, that's not a big deal. But you wanting us to put a rear main seal in your vehicle and you're providing the seal is just a stupid idea because the seal is $20 and the labor is... You know, hundreds of dollars. So it doesn't make sense. So it's just kind of walking through. I mean, for me personally, it depends on the customer number, how long they've been in. Do I know them? Things like that. But, simple things, really low labor is less of a gamble.
Well, let me tell you what Eddie told me the other day. Hmm. Eddie's been with us
32
years. Eddie said, I said, what are you working on this? And he goes, oh, I'm working on oil leak. And I said, well, why are the valve covers off of it? And he goes, well, that's what's leaking. And I said, so what's so hard about that? And he goes, he's had the rear main seal changed 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge job.
Yep.
That's a huge job.
Well, he I think it was under warranty because they installed the engine, but yes.
Okay. So the issue there was, is obviously for him to come in and say, well, you do a rear main seal, we need to ask the question, who says... And, oh, I have an oil leak. Well, let us make sure that the rear main seal, but the valve covers are above.
So far, I mean, yeah.
But above the rear main seal.
Sure.
And, but you have to look up higher, and
yeah.
it's not like you can look at it by opening the closet door.
Yeah.
You're going to use mirrors. You're going to use dye. You're going to use that stuff. So I said, Eddie, what'd you do? And he goes, I put dye in it. He says, we got 2 big streams of off the back.
Mm-hmm.
I said, are you 100% sure? He says, it's coming from the top. Now get out of my bay.
Yeah.
And I said, I'm going to go tell Andy on you. Okay, who's the caller?
Steve.
Steve, please stay there. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you ask me, I'm in Sun City, and where's a good shop to go to? I'm going to tell you Auto Dynamics is the place you need to go. Been around since 1982 in Sun City, but I've known Chuck Nyday since the late 60s and the early 70s. He knows right from wrong. He knows good and bad, and he knows BS when it goes out of the mouth of the technician into his ears. So if you're in Sun City, unfortunately, the only place I can recommend is Automotive Dynamics. Steve, you're up. How can I help you?
A quick question on the telematics for fuel economy. Would the grade of fuel, regular versus premium, like as soon as you fill it up and it's going to go to however estimated mileage till the tank is empty, is the grade of fuel going to register in that department?
No. No, not at all. There's
oh.
nothing to tell the computer and everything
the
from the computer that goes up into the cloud comes from the sensors, what we call inputs and outputs on the motor, and there's
yeah.
nothing to do it. Are you a premium guy?
No, I just like you've said, the regular gas is fine.
Yeah,
I got a Nissan Versa, so
okay.
I don't need
No, it doesn't. It has nothing to do with that. And for the rest of the folks, I'm not really a super unleaded guy because although we have two cars that we put super unleaded in, one of them's supercharged and one of them's turbocharged, so they're high-performance vehicles. But I've explained before, the pop, the push, the explosion on regular is like this. Boom. On super, it's in an exaggerated manner. Boom. That's it. It's in milliseconds of time. It's probably 1 or 2 milliseconds longer explosion and push, and it's not worth the money, and your motor doesn't love you more, and it won't last longer. So, but you bring up a good point. The telemetrics is that's different in car to car because some of them reset and some of them don't, and it's up to you to reset right. If you want. For me, I just leave it alone unless my wife gets in the car and I don't want her to see it's at 12 miles per gallon, and I just reset it then.
You don't reset it every fill-up?
Hell no.
Oh,
I'm
man.
At 50. Hey, my one-ton dually's at 15.4 all the time.
I know, but you don't like to ever... I can't believe you don't reset it.
I don't reset it.
I am the
All right, Steve, she's fired. I'll thank you very much. I appreciate your call.
Have a great weekend.
Okay,
you too.
Chris, you had one more question or one more comment. I'm all ears.
Yeah. I had struts and shocks put in shock mounts, and one of the shock mounts is bad, and it's only been 17,000 miles, and, of course, it's out of warranty. And then by the time you pull the strut out and put a new shock mount in, now you need an alignment, right?
Yes. Yes.
More likely, so I'm looking to open up a bigger can of worms. And well, also on a pickup truck I took in and they says, oh, your timing's off a few degrees. So I had it at 6, and they bumped it to what it should be, 8 or 4. They bumped it up 2 degrees.
Okay.
And now my gas mileage is worse. Can I go back and tell them to bump it back to 6?
Oh, that'd yeah. You got a lot going on in your world, boy. All right. First of all, let's go back to the upper strut mount. Sometimes, okay. Sometimes we will paint the position of the bracket on the upper strut mount. Put some black paint, blue paint, whatever. And then that way we can lift it up, change the mount, set it back down, and then we re-put the upper plate right on the paint. Now, there's a risk to that, and it's not the risk my shop's going to take. You need to know that I'm skipping an alignment, which is... How much is alignment?
Oh, between like 110 to 130.
Okay. So, and that's a toe set. All we're going to really do is do the toe. So sometimes we can do that. As far as your 17,000 miles, I don't know, you comment?
I mean, it's kind of one of those things. If it's a 12-12, you know, then he's in,
you're out
and
of luck.
He's out, then he's out. If it's a shop that, you know, if it was us, I would probably give it some consideration as a shop.
And the shop, are you talking about a shop or you bought parts at one
no,
of the auto...
It's a shop. It's a shop.
At the shop. Yeah. Did you ask him if that's something that would be covered under warranty?
He says, no, I think it was 6 months or maybe, like you said, maybe 12-12.
Okay.
Yeah, typically it would be a 12-12. And you
I'm
know,
sure the strut mount... Maybe guarantee, you know, they'll get me a new strut mount, but then I'd have to pay the labor to put it in and out, and then that's a couple $100. Well,
and that's, yeah, and that's not, I mean, that's not abnormal either. I mean, if it's a 12-12 and it's out by mileage and time, then, yeah, I mean, sometimes the vendors will work with us, but then there's still the labor. So
and they want to see paperwork from us as well because there are people in our industry that take advantage of that, and they look through their receipts and they found this water pump. They bought this same water pump number 12 months ago, and so they present that. But when the part comes off the car, it's obviously been on there 3 or 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
And so there are these games planned. I think the thing to do is find somebody who meets your needs. Our basic warranty is
it's 224
across the board.
Yeah.
And so we're going to hold pretty tight to that. And how many times a day or a week are we, how many or a month, how many warranty issues do we have a month or a week or a day or whatever?
I mean, very few. A month, very I mean,
what, one, two?
Yeah, maybe one or two.
Okay.
And I will say we were at 12-12 for a number of years. In the last few years, we've changed to 224.
Because the risk isn't there.
Yeah, but, I mean, there is still a lot of parts out there that are only 12-12 that hold steadfast. So with a shop, then changing it to 224, you are taking a risk and a gamble that those 12 parts, you know, if they go bad, you're going to have to cover them at a loss to the shop.
Now, but
can I throw another?
Wait a minute. Stop for a minute, Chris. Mm-hmm. Here's my thought on that. I think that we buy enough parts that they would, if we ask them a 2 and 24, they'd say yes. And I think if they're at 12 and 12,
2 minutes.
I'm not quite sure, is that the environment that everybody lives in, or are there exceptions to that based on volume?
Certain vendors hold fast to the 12-12.
Okay.
Few.
Okay.
But there are, yes.
All right. And it has to do with the shop and the relationship with their vendor and all that other kind of stuff. And a lot of times the labor is the hiccup. It's not the part that's the problem. The labor is the hiccup.
Gotcha.
And sometimes the vendor will say, Mark, you're out of warranty, but I'll cover half the labor. You cover the other half. And I say, fine. That's fine. We'll take you. Then I say to the customer, they're going to cover half and I'm going to cover half. Why don't we split it in thirds and you pay a third, he'll pay a third, and I'll pay a third. And mm-hmm. everybody's happy.
Yeah.
So you can work that way. Now, you got one other question.
Yeah, I was supposed to get KYB shocks, and I got Monroe's. Is there much of a difference between the two?
1 minute.
We're both shaking our head no.
No.
We sell okay. both of them. Sometimes it's price-driven, sometimes warranty-driven.
It's sometimes availability-driven.
Yeah. So, no, gotcha. The answer is I would be happy with those on my wife's car. And I really do love my wife, Chris, but I'd be happy. Bald tires. I'm happy with bald tires with the steel hanging out.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but rolls are great on my truck. On my car, I was hoping to do the KYB. Oh, well.
All right.
Thank you very much for all your time.
You're welcome. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Andy Salem Verdugo sitting here next to me. She's my daughter. She runs the operation while I'm up north playing with horses and cows and goldfish and chainsaws and all that other kind of stuff. And actually her and the kids are up here today, and they're all out riding quads right now when Andy decided that she'd come in and sit and do radio. But anyway, the lines are wide open, and there's five of them, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. If you have a car question or a car problem, if you want to discuss a warranty issue like we had with Chris this morning already, then you're more than welcome to give us a call, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. When it comes to good shops, I am the master of the list of really good shops in Phoenix, and Blackwell Automotive has been on since, I think, 1990. Blackwell's been around. He does everything good. He knows right from wrong. And he's a technician as well as a business owner. So he's not going to be led astray by a gray-haired guy with curly hair coming out of the neck of his shirt that's going to kind of BS his way through some kind of problem. So 40th Street and Greenway, and he's been there a long time. He works on vintage cars as well as family cars and trucks and motorhomes. So it's wide range. But every once in a while, if you drop by and you're going to drop off your car, you might ask him for a tour of the shop. That way you can see some of the hot rods he's building, which is pretty doggone impressive. Pretty good, impressive. And we have a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Say hello to Mike.
Mike, good morning.
Good morning. How you doing?
Good. Thank you.
I have a Ford F-350, and I was pulling my trailer and lost power. There was a stump, and I thought it was a flat tire. But later on, it turned out to be the plastic coming out of the turbo exhaust blew up. The truck told me to drive to clean my exhaust filter and Googled that. I went ahead and drove on the freeway 60 miles per hour for 30 miles until my truck finally shut down on me. I got towed to a shop, and they said, for $9,000, we'll fix the problem, or for $4,500, we'll get rid of the problem so it never happens again. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yep. What are you going to do?
Well, I already did it.
Okay.
I did it. So you're calling. Well, at least he admitted he already did it.
And you know what else? It ain't our shop either.
Oh. Okay, go ahead.
Now, let's talk about
this. Probably wasn't on your shop. It's called a DPF delete, where they
get
rid of the... All right, what year is your truck? What year is your truck?
The truck is a 2015.
Okay.
Okay, wait. So finish telling us. Okay, so
is there any more
you
to the
already
story?
Did it. So what's the?
Well, I did it. They got rid of the pillows that are they shove into your exhaust system that you can't get to clean yourself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why my truck was never warning me to do this before it blew up. So that's one of the things. I wonder if you've ever come across that issue before. I guess it depends now on the electronics of the system to be working appropriately or sensors.
How about three times
anyway,
a week?
But anyway, have I lost value in the truck? The guy tried to convince me that my truck gained in value by doing this. What do you think?
I don't think it gained in value. Did you keep any of the old parts?
No.
Okay.
Well, that's a big mistake.
Yeah, I would say try and get all the old parts back if it's been recent. I would try and get them back. I don't know that it's.
Okay.
I don't know that it's gained value. It cannot be registered in Maricopa County from this point forward.
Let me explain something. You said some stuff there that just really winds up my underwear, and it's not out of your mouth. It's out of somebody else's mouth. Okay. Mm-hmm. About the pillows and all this bull crap. Let me explain. The particulate filter in your truck is, as soot comes out of the motor, it gets into the particulate filter, and we need to clean this thing up every once in a while. So that's why you have DEF. DEF is an exhaust gas, diesel exhaust fluid. It causes a heck of a fire. And so as we clean up the particulate filter, the computer knows that the particulate filter is getting kind of plugged up because there's pressure sensors and temperature sensors that tell them that. So it turns on the faucet, DEF is sprayed in there, you got a hell of a forest fire, we burn up all the soot, then that goes through the catalytic converter and what comes out of the tailpipe is clean. You have just wiped that system out. So you are a pollutant son of a gun. I'm teasing you now. I'm teasing.
I was going to say, well, let him finish.
I'm teasing you.
I have a lot more to say, so go ahead.
All right. And so it's not gained in value because you're not going to be able to register in Maricopa County. You're not going to pass any of their tests whatsoever. So you've deleted one of the exhausts. But everybody believes that a DEF delete is going to give me rocket horsepower, quarter horse rear up on its back legs and wave the front tires. Nothing could be further from the truth. You got the turbo fixed, and you got the particulate filter or the cat, whichever one was screwed up. You got it all taken care of, and so you're back to normal. But we don't do that. First of all, it's against the law to do that for shops. You can do it yourself, but a shop to do it. The answer is I don't want anybody else to think that this is the way to go. Put the truck back the way it was. Now, I want to tell you, my 12 Dodge that's a romping, stomping, wheel lifting, bad truck, it didn't come with DEF, and that's why I bought a 12.
Yeah, I was going to say, we need to speak more about this after the break, but every truck that we have is older because we didn't want that DEF system and what comes along with it. And now, my brother Alan services a lot of diesels. Do most of the diesels he sees, are they deleted? Not by us, that customers have done themselves or whatever the case may be. Yes.
Yes.
So.
We see them.
Yes.
We don't do them.
We don't do them, but we see them, and a lot of people do them. So, but. Maybe they weren't told. You weren't told on the front side that, you know, this cannot be registered in Maricopa County again. And if you sell it, if you have the parts to put back on it to make it back, you know, stock factory, you're going to be in a lot better shape because if you can't sell it to somebody in the county who can't register out of the county, if that makes sense.
Or you can go back to the shop that did it and say, hey, and the next time somebody comes in with the DEF delete, can I have their particulate filter and catalytic converter? You know?
Yeah, I mean,
and put it in your attic or something. You know, put it in the trunk of your wife's car. Who
cares? It's always good to have it to go back to.
But you know that was an opportunity. And what was the bid, real quick? Well, how much did they want to fix it right, and how much did you end up paying them for the DEF delete? And don't say the name of the shop, please.
$9,500.
He said he'd charge $9,000 to fix it back to where it was. Mm-hmm. And $4,500 to delete it.
Okay, I missed that part.
And the other thing too is, from what I understand,
is that correct? By the way, is that a correct estimate, or was he?
I think the 95 is a little high. I think the 45 is right for a DEF delete, but I think the 95 is high, and maybe the 95 is high is to help the customer make a better decision. Because if it was 45 and 6, that might make it a little different. I don't know the answer to that question.
Yeah, because we don't know what the 9,000 has in it,
yeah.
You know, and or what it gotcha. What it would take for the delete. But also, it's important for those trucks to be driven, not short trips, right?
Yes,
they want to see long trips. If you're just running short trips to the store and back, that's not good for the truck. That's not how the truck is made to be driven. And then also, when that light comes on, it's in the regen mode, and you need to continue to drive until that light goes out.
I think on the DEF delete, most all of them, and some of them at least, I think the regen goes away. And so did they charge you for a programmer or anything like that?
I've got a little dial on the bottom of my, just within reach of my arm below the steering wheel, that I can set it to 5 settings.
Mm-hmm.
And I always keep it on 1.
Okay,
so
that's
fine. Yes, they did.
Yeah, they did. Okay, you're on your own. But anyway, thank you for that. That's good conversation. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, and we'll be back. Well, welcome back to 44 Minutes After the Hour of 10 o'clock. Boy, there's been a lot of conversations behind the scenes. I know you had something to say, and I wouldn't even let, I didn't even want to talk to you at the break. Go ahead. What were you going to ask?
I was just laughing.
At?
Just, you know, about the call. It was funny to me.
Is that a call that we get a lot?
No, not often. I mean, there's times where people call and ask just straight. They don't realize that it's, you know, deleting a vehicle is a highly illegal thing. And they call and it's like one of those like, oh, no. you don't even want to say that because it's just, and they don't know. I mean, they don't know or understand. But
see, we've come from that even before this happened with catalytic converters. So in the 80s when they came out with catalytic converters, and I think the catalytic converters could have come around in the 70s. It seemed to me it was the late 70s, early 80s, somewhere in that. It was the same thing. Oh, the catalytic converter, got to get it off. The catalytic converter, what happens is the fuel, the leftover fuel, and we're going to, the air pump pumps air into the exhaust. So to have a big, huge fire, we need fuel and air. Mm-hmm. So we have fuel from the engine that didn't use, and then we have air from the air pump, mm-hmm. and poof, with the catalytic converter turns into just a big red furnace. So the red furnace burns whatever fuel the engine didn't use. So what comes out of the tailpipe is carbon monoxide, and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and the carbon monoxide is real low because up front at the engine it's 8%, and at the tailpipe it's 0.5%.
Sure.
So the catalytic converter, now that's assuming that we're going to fill the fuel at the engine on the front side this kind of way. Okay, that's normal. Well, now you take a car with a catalytic converter and you turn it into a fire hose. The fuel system is now a fire hose, so it's going pumping all kinds of fuel in it. Well, the catalytic converter has so much fuel, it melts down, plugs the exhaust, and everybody blames it on the catalytic converter.
Mm-hmm.
Never mind the fact that we went from a up front underneath the hood to the cylinder,
sure.
that we have this 4-inch fire hose running with fuel.
Yeah.
And it's the same way with the diesel performance. You're going to add fuel to make it hotter, faster, greater, better, stronger, mm-hmm. but you got to deal with it downstream.
Mm-hmm.
Today, it does do a good job downstream. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have DEF problems and DEF delivery problems.
There's
and
a lot
air
of
problems
with that whole system.
You're right, but in reality, it's minor compared to what we started out with when we started using mixture control solenoids on carburetors and we put cats on cars.
Sure.
Oh, it was the learning curve was unbelievable. But in reality, it's all about fresh air. It's all about, we don't want you out there polluting the air. And just like your truck pollutes the air and Alan's truck pollutes.
Yeah, just like he drove to the East Coast to buy a truck that doesn't have DEF. So. But that was because it's a 12. That what didn't come with it.
I wanted a red dually 1-ton short bed, but I wanted the Longhorn interior, and that was the only one in the world.
And you didn't want DEF.
That's true.
Yeah.
I wanted to buy a truck that was the 12, so because 13 they were coming out with the DEF.
Yeah.
The emissions.
Yeah.
Besides that, my truck's got 140,000 miles on it.
Does it really?
Yeah. No one's ever died driving behind me or anything like that. But we do lots of diesel work. We have a diesel performance division, and they do lifts and lowerings and tires and wheels.
And a lot of mechanical work.
A lot of mechanical work. Lots and lots of mechanical work. As a matter of fact, I got two codes on my way home the other day, and I got to call Alan.
Okay.
And it's a restriction in the fuel delivery system and something else, and I think the fuel filter's just plugged up, but I need to run the by him because he's really into that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm going to do that. But the codes that are in the car They give us an idea of where the problem may lie, but it isn't the problem. So if it says O2 sensor lean, that doesn't mean you replace the O2 sensor, because a vacuum leak can cause an O2 sensor to go lean.
Yeah.
So there are, and then a rich O2 sensor, something on the top end of the value, so not low but high, that means like a fuel pressure regulator, the diaphragm's bad and you're sucking unmetered fuel into the engine, which is causing the catalytic converter to try to handle the volume of fuel that's coming out the tailpipe. And so people replace the O2 sensors first, but the O2 sensor is just a messenger. It's just telling
you. It's not the root of the problem.
It's not the root of the, and it is, you can't believe, and you know it is, it's so easy to test the fuel. You know, for instance, the O2 sensor, let's pretend it has numbers 1 through 5. It talks in numbers. All of them talk in numbers. 1 through 5, and 3 is the sweet spot. That's where we kind of want it. So if I want to see 1, I create a huge vacuum leak. So I pull the line off the brake booster, and the O2 sensor should go 1. Mm-hmm. And then I keep my hands, and I cover up the airflow, so I restrict the amount of air, but the fuel delivery is the same, and then it says 5. That's how it takes a little longer than me saying it to test the O2 mm-hmm. sensor. But yeah. Boy, they sell O2 sensors because people... And you know what they say? It needed it anyway.
Oh, yeah. I had a guy call me and he said he wanted a price for all 4. He had 4 on his vehicle. And I just told him, that's unheard of. I mean, we don't really see that. So, I mean, if they're selling you that just because you have an O2 code or, you know, whatever the case may be, I would get it diagnosed, because you're going to spend 10 times more in replacing all 4 O2 sensors than to actually figuring out if that's the problem.
And what quote are you going to give them? And this is an industry quote, because we give numbers that we know are well within the industry sweet spot. What are you going to tell them to test 4 O2 sensors? What's the dollar number on
that? I would
that?
Tell them $75 to $150.
Okay. And that's about it. Mm-hmm. Because $75 is just more than a half an hour, and $150 is just more than an hour. Mm-hmm. And it really has to do with is the connections there. And then I know our guys are going to check 4, and a lot of other shops do the same. Mm-hmm. They're going to check the 4. If they've got one that's out of spec, they're going to go, oh, well, there's a vacuum leak right here. I can fix this whole problem right now mm-hmm. by cutting this piece of plastic hose off and putting a piece of rubber hose on it, and we're done.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did the other day on, I don't know whose car, they sent me a picture. Oh, it was Daryl's truck.
Oh, Jenkins.
Yeah. No, Floyd.
Yeah, sorry.
He had a big plastic vacuum line that mm-hmm. had been collapsed and broken, and they put it all rubber in. And he called me, and he goes, I don't know. He says, first of all, I just love your kids. And I said, how big was your bill? And I'll tell you how much I love you. And he goes, no, it's not that. He says, he's got a Ford.
And sorry about that.
Sorry about that. That's what I told him. I said, when did you hit your head? So he's on his way back up north, and he goes, it just drives like it's a brand new truck. It's got power that I've never seen it have. It's done this, it's done that, and everything else. And I said, well, what did they charge you? And he goes, it doesn't make any difference. And I said, what did they charge you? And he goes, it was $140. And I said, $140 to find the problem and replace that manifold. He says, yeah. So I called up Alan. I said, oh, so what is it? Everybody gets half price today? And he goes, it's always been that. I said, okay, fine. Anyway, 602-508-0960. We're going to come back for another hour. And we talk cars. And if you have a question or a problem, I'll give you something that really makes me very mad. There's this lady who loves her shop. Mm-hmm. And she takes her car in, and every single time she takes it in, the bills is thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So she took it in, and they had lower control arm bushings done. They did a bunch of work that was like mileage related, but there was no symptoms. Because I said to her, this usually has a clunk symptom when you take off or when you stop abruptly. Did you have any clunk? No. This one over here had a vibration symptom. Have you ever had a steering wheel shake or the seat of your pants shake? No. She had no symptoms for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, they were doing fluid changes on half of what the interval was in the owner's manual. So she went in the other day, and it went from an oil change to $2,300. I think it was $2,300. Mm-hmm. I sent you the paperwork.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever bid that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you remember anything about it?
Yes.
Was it? Okay. I'm going to ask you because I don't know the answer.
Uh-huh.
I gave her the sheet mm-hmm. from the shop, and I said, bid it. Let me know where we're at. Apples for apples. What was her number? What was our number?
Roughly, I think it was. I didn't bid all of the stuff.
Okay.
So what I bid, there was 2 separate repairs. It was, theirs was 18. We were at 15.
Okay.
But what I want to say to that too is people will get those quotes from laundry lists, whatever, from shops. And I mean, you got to kind of go through there and decipher what is maintenance, what is safety, what is, you know, what everything is. And then to call around and have other shops bid it, to me, is silly, because if it doesn't need it, why are you wasting the time bidding it? And 9 times out of 10, I think that we see a lot of those lists and we don't necessarily agree with an approach of, you know, what needs to be replaced or if it needs to be replaced or how severe it is and things like that. So it's kind of a waste of time to call all these shops and bid jobs that you don't even know are valid.
Just go and have your oil change done by somebody else and say, would you look my car over?
I was told it needs this, 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 and this.
And so many of the things that are really high profit, mm-hmm. high profit yeah. stuff. And frankly, we are not in the middle of the range of pricing. We are not at the middle of the range. If it's 1 to 100, we're at the 60% mark, 65% mark. We're going to be a little more expensive than the average. But like you said, we're at 15 and they were 18.
Mm-hmm.
And they were even higher than we were.
Mm-hmm.
But so much of the stuff I objected to, because in talking to her, there was no symptoms. And two of the four things had definite symptoms associated with the problem.
Yeah, and I think bushings are a big one. You know, shops will recommend them. That's fine, but If you're not having any symptoms and you have surface cracks, then who cares? Leave them as is. If it's cracked all the way through and you're having a clunk or you're having this, then that's another thing. But
the bushing is missing. Part of the bushing is missing. Come out here, because they do that. We're supposed to take you into the shop and show you while the car's up on the rack. Hey, take a look
or
at this.
Ask.
Yeah. You can ask. Absolutely, mm-hmm. you can ask.
I mean, CV boots are another one. You know, a lot of people, you know, they get recommended because there's, you know, grease or whatever.
A CV boot is a boot on a front-wheel drive axle. There's two of them on each axle, and they contain the grease that lubricates the joint. When the boot tears, the rotation at 60 miles an hour throws all the grease out of the boot, all underneath the car, and the joint that's spinning at 60 miles an hour no longer is lubricated. So the joint is NFL. It's not for long before it's going to go bad and you're going to have a vibration. So we go from throwing grease to a bad joint and then a vibration, especially on acceleration or deceleration, and boom, we're done.
Yeah, and I think with that, you want to catch it early, because if there's a hole in the boot and you can do one of the boots, because there's typically an inner and an outer,
mm-hmm.
then if the axle's already clicking, then you've got to replace the whole thing. So there is sometimes a little bit of savings catching that early, but even then, sometimes just with normal driving, there's going to be a little bit of grease. If they see that, they're recommending that. I mean, we would more recommend it if you see the boot completely torn open and grease slinging out.
I'm going to say that that 75-80% of the shops in Phoenix are good shops,
of course,
and mean well.
Mm-hmm.
There's 20-25% of them out there that are standing on everybody else's shoulders to make themselves look better. They badmouth their competitors. They talk about their technicians wouldn't know what end of the donkey to stick the thermostat or the thermometer is what I meant to
yeah.
say. That kind of stuff.
Well, and yes, or it's just technicians that haven't maybe seen a lot, or that, you know, that are newer to the industry and things like that, and knowing the difference between you know, normal grease or normal leakage from shocks and things like that, or what you're going to see just normally versus this needs attention and repair.
And you bring up oil leaks, and that there can be an oil leak, and it's going to start as just simply wetness,
mm-hmm.
and then it's going to drip. And then it's going to drip more, and you're going to have a stain, and then the stain is going to hit the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So when it's called weeping and seeping. That's the one that wads up my underwear, mm-hmm. is when we got somebody that says, I've got this gasket that's weeping, and at the $1,100 to replace
sure.
it. And it's like that one I was talking about with Eddie. The guy had two or three rear main seals, and we did valve cover gaskets on it. And it was easy enough, because he got a mirror and a black light. He put a little dye in there. He looks back there, and he can see the back of the valve covers. Now, the back of the valve covers are directly over the rear main seal.
Mm-hmm.
So they did the lowest leak, and they should have looked for the highest leak at the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
But of 75% of the shops I know would have looked for the leak.
Yeah.
They would have done it right.
Looked up.
It's really a matter of the sophistication level and the technician's ability and how many ASE certs he has.
Well, yeah.
And I'm an ASE master tech, and that means I've passed all the tests all the time. And that means that that's why they call you an ASE Master Tech. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we'll be back in about 4 minutes. It was really the see you later button, so Gil's looking for where I'm at, and all of a sudden he says, Mark's not there, and he should be, and unfortunately, he's right, because I messed up.
Glad you're back, Mark.
What's that?
Glad you're back.
Yeah. Oh, gosh. In my defense, there's lots of people in right now at my house, and there's kids running all over, there's quads running all over, and I had to go out and get one started, and I just didn't get it there fast enough. We missed the open fight about a minute and a half.
He's been playing the open for us. Sorry about that.
And that's what I said to him, sorry. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing has been around since 1970, but Brian and Thelma, who run Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, I know their mothers and fathers from the 60s and the 70s because they were in the gas station and auto repair business. That's when gas stations had bays back then. So you can trust them. They're the only shop in Mesa that I can actually tell you about, because others have tried to apply for my best car repair shops list, and they have some deficiencies with respect to time or complaints or stuff, ASE certifications with respect to their technicians. But Thompson's checks all the boxes. So if you're in Mesa, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing's on Main Street just east of Stapley, and I would think that that would be a good place to go. Okay, we need to cover your background just for the people that don't know my family.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Mom and I got married 46 years ago, mm-hmm. and you're less than that. We'll cover that base real
okay.
quick. When was the first time you remember working for the family business, and what were you doing?
Picking up cigarette butts.
How old are you?
I was walking, so.
Okay, so five or
two.
Six.
Five or six.
You think five or six? Seven, eight, nine,
yeah,
ten?
Young.
Okay.
Young.
And it is true. I think you were when we had the mobile station in Ahwatukee. And
I wasn't born at the mobile station. I mean.
Well, we opened in 79 and we left in 86, I think, didn't we? Or no. No. You're probably right. Were you born during Guadalupe time?
Yeah, or right before something, okay. or in between the two.
85,
yeah.
Somewhere around there. Yes, less the kids less. All worked on weekends, and part of what they did is that we had these little dustpans and brooms, and they would walk around and pick up cigarette butts, and it's true that we would pick up a lot of cigarette butts in the parking lot. Mm-hmm. Today we don't do that anymore because there is no cigarette butts
no,
in the parking lot.
No, but there's
lot.
Trash and just, I mean, we still do that when we
do
see
you
it.
Do you have your daughter go pick up trash at
the yeah,
shop?
Yeah, I mean, and if you see something as you're walking through the shop, you pick it up and throw it in the garbage.
And that works well on those hairy-chested technicians, doesn't it? Coming from you.
Our guys do that. They're good.
They do. I used to pick, if I saw them walk by a piece of trash, I'd go get it and put it on their toolbox.
Yeah.
And then I might just put my lunch there as well and my box from Taco Bell and all that kind of stuff. Just to aggravate
them. Yeah, they got the point real quick.
But the point is,
yeah.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960.
I think we got a couple.
And
callers.
All righty, who might be first, Gil?
Say hello to Rob.
Rob, good morning.
Good morning.
How can I help you, buddy?
Hey, thanks for taking the call. I've got a brand new 2021 Chevrolet 2500 heavy-duty four-door truck, and I'm having a problem with the transmission on it.
Okay.
So what it does is when I'm slowing down around 12 or 14 miles an hour, it downshifts by itself, just like a hard downshift. Like when I'm taking a corner or slowing down, anytime I get around 12 to 14 miles an hour,
okay.
It downshifts by itself. And then if you try to hit the gas, of course, then it kind of clunks. And I've had it to the dealer 3 times now, and they're saying that it's normal. So
okay.
I'm just trying to figure out what to do with it.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. Are you pushing any buttons to change the transmission pattern? Sometimes they have two different levels of transmission performance. Are you manually shifting it, or are you put it in D or overdrive, and you're letting the computer shift the entire transmission? Which one are you doing?
Yeah, I let it do it itself. I'm not smart enough for anything.
Fair enough, mm-hmm. fair enough. And how many gears do you have? Have you ever counted them?
No, I haven't counted.
Okay, you probably have six. You could even have seven. But to answer your questions, it's not – what kind of vehicle did you come from? What were you driving before you got this new truck?
Well, we have a half a dozen of these same trucks. It's just they're all the way from 2015 to 2021. So we have a lot of them, and none of the other ones do this.
That's the best thing right there you've got going for you. If you're comparing apples to apples and you got two 21s and one doesn't do it, then you don't have to go fix it yourself. You don't have to do anything other than explain to the dealer in a nice way that I have two of these and I'll bring you both of them. You can have them for one day. And if you promise me that you're going to have the technicians drive both of them to compare, but there's a problem with this one because I drive number two and it's normal. And I like how it shifts. Everything's fine. I drive number six, and number six just doesn't shift the same way.
But is it the same transmission and setup?
Are they all going to be like two-wheel drive, half tons, three-quarter tons?
They're three-quarter tons, but I don't have two 21s. I just have a 2020 and a 2021, so they're a year apart. So.
I wonder if there's anything different engine or transmission-wise.
I think so, because we're starting to see transmissions with 6 and 7 speeds that we never saw before. And
I mean, the other thing is you just keep driving, and if you have the documentation that you've had this issue or this complaint since early on, if something comes of it later on down the road, then you have the documentation that this has been happening for a long time.
I like that idea a lot, and you need to do that every time you take it in. You say, oh, by the way, would you have somebody that's seasoned take my truck and run it through all the gears, get on the freeway, get off the freeway, do a stop and go and a couple of stop at Taco Bell, whatever, and tell me if the performance of this transmission is okay, because I've never felt like it was okay. And so I'm trying to just kind of keep a reading on it. Now the only other thing you can do is take it to another dealer. That's mm-hmm. okay. You can take it to another dealer. And you can say, this is something that this kind of a little mind games. You say, I've been told no one is, I've been told by friends of mine, no one's going to be able to fix this. But a couple of guys say, you guys are really, really good at what you do.
Throwing the challenge flag in front.
Exactly.
But at the same time, if he goes to two different ones and they both tell him it's normal, then it's normal. And you just keep driving it and, you know, see if something changes or something comes more of it.
And he's going to have two repair orders that say what he says. Mm-hmm. Now, I would type it up and send it in an email to the service writer and ask him to copy and paste it to your repair order, or you read him something or hand him a piece of paper. Then when you get your receipt, you staple those two pieces of paper together. So 3 years from now, when this transmission turns up to be half bad, half dead, and you find out it's an $8,000, take it out and put it back in, then you can hand those two pieces of paper to the dealer and say, I could like you to reconsider that price. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
okay.
It is, though, an issue, because I got to drive a newer model truck not too long ago, and it seemed to me it was short shifting a lot. But again, on fuel economy, we want to get to the highest gear as quickly as we can. It's kind of like riding a 10-speed bike. You start in first gear, and it's going to shift you to second, third, fourth, and fifth real quick. But you're kind of not ready for that, but that's the fuel economy sweet spot. But then when you get to 55 miles an hour, we start locking up the converter, we better be in 7th or 8th gear. Then that's really good. So this is all driven by fuel economy, all of this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I guess my biggest concern is the clunk. You know, when I try to re-engage the transmission when I hit the gas, I get a clunk. So that's kind of the concern. It's not even the downshifting, but... Okay, yeah, I was thinking maybe that's what I should do anyway.
Can you demonstrate the clunk? Because if you can demonstrate the clunk, when you call and make an appointment, you say, I have learned how to make this clunk happen every time. I promise not to have your technician for an hour. I promise I'm going to take him out. I can bring him back. We'll be gone 15 or 20 minutes at the most. I'm going to show him how to make it happen, and then if he wants, I'll switch places with him. That's a reasonable request.
Okay. Yeah, I showed him exactly what it did, and it does it every time. So it's not a hidden problem. So.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much, Rob. Thank you. That is a problem with newer model vehicles, especially because you may not remember, but Cadillac came out with a V8 motor that they would cut to four cylinders and six cylinders. Well, when we changed it from a four-cylinder to a six-cylinder or a six-cylinder to a four-cylinder, we had all kinds of calamities going on. You'll notice that's not there now anymore.
Well, and they may tell him right now that, you know, it's normal, but that's not to say that in a year or something down the road that they're going to realize a lot of people are having this problem and then they figure out a fix for it.
And it could or could be out of warranty, but it also is he'll have the opportunity someday to say, hey, wait a minute, they've got a new software update on the transmission module.
Exactly.
And that does away. And the predominant thing is a clunk. So, all right, good luck, Rob. Anybody else?
Yep.
Say hello to Linda.
Linda, good morning.
Good morning. I am first-time caller, first-time listener, actually. I have a 2001 Toyota Camry with only 111,000 miles on it because it was driven by my mother-in-law to church and to the hairdresser and back.
Okay.
And it also has a transmission curiosity. It doesn't happen all the time. And when you accelerate up to, and we get up to about going, I'm thinking it's from first to second, and it's an automatic, it has this delay.
One minute.
And you can feel the car jerk as it goes into the next gear.
Okay.
And nobody wants to say anything. You know, we've done the whole bit, and it's all, don't know anything about that. That's just something you have to live with, and we do, and it drives fine, and we don't have any other issues with it, and it gets the oil changed, and the tires rotated, and it goes another 10,000 miles, but
okay. We
don't know what that is.
All right, let me ask you a couple questions. Would it be fair to say that this shift point from first to second is more abrupt than 2 to 3 and 3 to 4, or I'm gonna take the other extreme. This is a soft shift. It's one of those shifts that you called it a delay, so I'm thinking that it sounds like this in an exaggerated way. A normal shift is in. Okay, that's a normal shift. So if you have a delayed shift, or if it's slipping between gears, it goes in. So there's a delay, there's a neutral in the middle between first and second. Is that what it is?
I don't hear it in the sound at all.
You feel it?
It's not a sound issue. It's a feel issue.
Okay.
And it shakes. I mean, it feels like it's not going to go into the next gear.
Okay.
For just that half a second. And it doesn't make any sound issues. Nothing changes there.
How about this?
Let me
try this. Instead of just going from first gear to second gear, there seems to be a little delay in the middle where it's kind of feels or sounds like neutral and then it engages. So it's kind of a delayed shift, or there's a delay in the middle, or there's a space in the middle between first and second gear that's not there. Yeah. For instance, like most cars will go yin, 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 yin. But in your case, there's just a little, and it's only between first and second. Yes.
Generally, yes. I think it's happened maybe in the higher gears, maybe
okay.
The next higher gear up once. But it is a physical.
Okay.
My husband and I look at each other and go, okay.
All right.
And it's like a jerk in the car.
Okay.
Or a.
All right. I'm going to make a call on the break, so you stay right there. And anybody else, 602-508-0960. So when it comes to fixing cars, there's lots of good shops in town, but if it's a diesel, strictly diesel service and repair is up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. I've known Nate for a long time. He has a great staff. They work on the Chevys, the Ford, the Dodges, and other diesels. Nate's a guy that's kind of unusual in our industry that he'll talk to you on the phone. There's guys that will talk to you for a short period of time, but not spend 45 minutes with you on the phone trying to fix your car over the phone, because we all know that that's an effort in futility. But Nate's a good guy, and he will return your call. So if you have a diesel question or a problem, then Strictly Diesel Service and Repair up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road's a good place. Hey, Linda, are you still there?
I am.
Okay. I've talked to a couple of automotive experts and their tranny guys. And one of them said, this is a 20-year-old car with 100,000 miles. This car needs to be driven. This car needs to be, he says, we've got hard internal seals. We could have hard internal seals. The rubber's hard because it's never really been fully warmed up. A drive to Flagstaff and back in the summertime would do wonders for this car because it will return some pliability to the seals because the fluid will warm up the seal. And so once the rubber gets warm.
I appreciate that. What I negated to tell you was, I've owned the car for 5 years now.
Okay, so okay. She's been driving it regular for 5 years.
Okay. I Andy and I are under the opinion that you should continue to drive it. I only want you to do this. If you can manually shift from first to second, second to third, third to fourth, I would see if the problem is still there. The question is when I manually shift it, it shifts fine. But when I just put it in drive or overdrive and drive it and let the throttle and the computer shift it is when we have the delay. It's really an issue that no one's going to know what's wrong with this. Mm-hmm. You run a little bit of a risk by changing the fluid in the filter. I think it's a good risk. A lot of people don't, and they would argue with me. But I think it's going to tell you better, worse, or the same, and I think two of those are good. It's not going to be worse. It could be better, or it could be the same. But typically, it's not going to be worse if you service it.
Yeah, or they might see something if they drop the pan, you know, with the filter or some stuff like that. Because we have a 2000 that has
Camry
that has about 100,000 miles, and we've run into issues similar to that. And we did do a service on it, and it did make it improved it.
And that's the car you drive now?
No, that's one of our rental cars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were driving it, but yeah.
Okay. So that's kind of what
I think it's interesting you said that about the hard internal seals, because my understanding is that this some of the history of this car is that it sat in a parking lot for a while when you know someone wasn't feeling well, and so I don't know.
Well, the seals aren't going to age there. We got to go, but the seals aren't going to age there in the parking lot. The seals, we want the seal to be warm and then cold, and warm and then cold. And we want to continue to bring the rubber up to temperature and down. But if the rubber just sees cold all the time, then it's going to get brittle. But a rubber seal will remain pliable if we warm it up and cool it off, warm it up and cool it off. But you've got your choices in front of you. Good luck, Linda. Got to run to Bob. Bob, you're up next. How can I help you?
Okay, I've got a 2007 Saturn View. I've had it since 2007. No problems with it ever. Got 110,000 miles on it. I've got an issue that I've been driving for 60 years and I've never even heard of.
Okay.
The good news is it happens every time now.
Okay.
When you hit the brake, you push in the brake, the idle goes up.
Okay.
The harder you hit the brake, the more it revs up.
That's not hard. I can fix it for you now.
Oh, okay. I've never heard of it.
It's a brake booster.
It'll do it. Oh.
Yeah, because you're creating a vacuum leak. The brake boosters, and I bet the pedal changes tension. I said sometimes the brake pedal is probably nice and soft and has power brakes, and there's other times where you feel the brake pedal's a little bit more like a rock. But when you change the idle, when you apply the brakes, then the brake booster's bad. That's an easy one.
Okay, so it's just the new brake booster, I guess.
Well, there's ways to test it. Certainly, I'm not saying that you just go get somebody to put a brake booster in it. But, I mean, it wouldn't take...
Those symptoms are... You know, would lead us to believe that the booster is the issue.
The only thing that's going on when you apply the brakes is that we're using engine vacuum to make the brakes power brakes. Well, if we've got a problem and we have a vacuum leak there, when you apply the brakes, we're going to affect the idle. And so those go hand in hand. You could go, I mean, I would probably, it wouldn't take a gray-haired guy very long to diagnose a bad booster. That's all. And I'll bet, too, that you can sit there in a traffic light or in your house, and you're in park, and the thing is idling and everything else, and then I want you just to gently push on the brake pedal within in park, and I'll bet you can get the idle to change or to be rough just by gently applying the brake pedal, and you're not even moving. You're in park. And if that's the case,
it'll do it in gear or in neutral or park.
Okay, well then I'm done. It's a bad brake booster.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks. Good luck. Sam, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, I got a twofold question. It's partially automotive.
2 minutes.
Is As far as oil filter wrenches, I changed my oil, and I've tried different oil filter wrenches, and none of them seem to work as far as trying to get the filter off. It slips. I've tried everything as far as putting something in between it. And
okay, let me ask you some questions because I'm kind of low on time. When you put it back on, how are you putting an oil filter back on? Do you seat the gasket, and then what do you do after that?
I turn it as much as I can by hand, and then I use the filter wrench and go three clicks, so to speak.
Okay. That's probably more your problem than anything else, because you're not supposed to do that. You're just supposed to put it on as tight as you can by hand. And all of our guys do it by hand. I don't know how many technicians we have. 417, Nandy told me last time we had. But the idea is that we don't have leaks. It's not an issue that we deal with. We don't see that. And I think you're creating the problem yourself because we're not supposed to be using a wrench to put it on. So two hands, as tight as you can, I think that'll work.
Okay, that's good advice because I've always feared the vibration factor and the filter coming loose.
We don't see that issue really.
Yeah, we don't see that at all.
Yeah.
So good luck to you. And Sam, I got to take you after the break, so I'm going to take you first. I promise. So we're going
to
be back
so
about 30.
Yep.
Oh, we just got done talking to
it's
Sam.
It's okay. You didn't make the note.
I didn't write the note.
Yep. That's okay.
I'm a little frazzled. Okay, Gil, go ahead and embarrass me in front of all my friends. Okay. Anyway, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And so we have five lines, and if you have a car question or a car issue, you can tell us all about it. Until then, Mark and Andy, we're here at your service, and we're going to be back in about in another minute or two as we take a break. So 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Linda, if you're still listening, and I hope you are, I was remiss. I should have mentioned Automatic Transmission Exchange. They've been in Phoenix since 1968. Phil and his staff are really good transmission diagnostic experts. So, Linda, what I'm going to do is I'm going to text Phil and Trey, and I'm going to say Linda might bring her Camry in, and she's got a delayed 1-2 shift. That's kind of the technical word for it. They'll drive it for you for free. So my suggestion is call Automatic Transmission Exchange, make an appointment to have someone test drive your car at a date that's convenient for both of you, and say you're a referral from Mark Salem. And I don't make any money on this. I don't want any money on this, but I think they would be in the best condition to tell you what to do. And so, Linda, again, Automatic Transmission Exchange. They're at 40th Street in Washington. Let's go to the phones. Raphael, good morning. How can we help you?
Yes, good morning. Thank you. I got a question on my 96 Mitsubishi. It's the wiring. It's getting pretty old, and the wires are kind of brittle and breaking. Particular by the connectors. I was wondering if you had any thoughts on possibly rewiring or someone to see.
Well, Raphael, there's a whole bunch of harnesses there. Which specific harness are you talking about? Is this the engine harness? Is this the back of the dashboard? Is it the harness that comes off the battery? I mean, you can't just like buy one harness for the whole car. They come in sections. Which one are you having trouble with? Is it the engine harness?
Various harnesses in the engine area. I mean, dispensers and just various harnesses, even to the control module. They're getting pretty brittle and ready to break. And some of them have even been kind of touched up and to make them work.
Okay.
I would say don't deal with anything until you have a problem that's related to the wiring.
I agree with that. And brittle, I mean, keep in mind that you pay attention, he's got a 96. So it's 24 years old. And it's probably got a lot of miles on it. And engine temperature is going to have a lot to do with the brittle wires.
Yes. It's not something typically you see, though, that you go in there and replace a bunch of the wiring.
You're right.
Only do that chasing an issue or because of an issue. So if you have a problem relating to that may be caused by, wiring that's brittle.
You fix it.
You splice it, do whatever you need to do to make it work at that location. But I wouldn't, you would spend tons of time and money trying to rewire, the complete truck.
And one other thing too, you could get on the internet and also call a couple of Mitsubishi dealers, and you could say to them, do you have the ability for an engine harness? Now, the engine harness typically comes off the firewall on the driver's side, typically. And it's basically going to split up into the charging system and into the fuel the delivery system and to the sensors and stuff like that on the engine. You might be able to buy an entire engine harness, and it's a plug-and-play harness. They're going to want the VIN number on the car, and you can plug it in, and it's not that hard to buy. It's going to be a little expensive, and on a 1 to 10 scale, to replace the engine harness typically would be about a 4 or a 5 or a 6. To replace the engine harness, because all you're going to do is plug in one end and then just start taking clips out, taking the brackets out, moving the wires through here, plugging it into this kind
more
of thing.
More just time.
It's time. It's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So that's what I would do. I'd check that, but I'm with Andy. Let's just fix what we need to fix and not go crazy. We'll just do it as we go along, and then hopefully you'll come to a point where you don't have the problem mm-hmm. on a regular basis. But that's what's best for you, Raphael. Jim, you're up next. How can I help you?
Yeah, I have a 08 Honda Civic, 225,000 miles. All the engine mounts have recently been diagnosed as bad. $2,000 job I was quoted. And the people that came up with that diagnosis said you could drive it like that for a long time. They said essentially the mounts are resting on the frame, and it'll just vibrate. You can hardly notice it when it's warm. And I'm just wondering if that's so, if, you know, just put up with the vibration. And they said the engine's not going to fall out or anything like that.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. And see, here's the deal. There's a piece of metal that attaches to the motor and a piece of metal that attaches to the frame. And in the middle between the two of them is a big rubber pillow. The pillow's gone. There's no reason why you can't just do one mount.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we would prefer that you do both engine mounts together and then maybe the tranny mount and then the other mount. You know, but the two engine mounts, you can do just the two engine mounts. But to answer your question, it's not likely. This is 100 years ago, we had a problem with the Chevrolets and the motor would spin clockwise in the engine compartment. The driver's side motor mount would break. This doesn't happen today. This is what happened a long time ago. The motor would spin clockwise in the engine. It would take the throttle cable and pull the throttle wide open. That was pretty damn scary. They came up and they fixed the engine mount. They made a device to where it catches itself, and they put a cable on there, and they did all kinds of stuff. Since then, I've never seen anybody have a problem. If you're okay with the vibration because you have metal to metal and the pillow is gone, but I would suggest that you at least bid two engine mounts.
But why? But that if they're all bad,
it's okay. We would prefer that he did all of them at the same time.
Yeah.
And his Mitsubishi is likely to be a front wheel drive,
oh,
so
it's
got
Honda.
A Honda,
yeah, yeah.
But three. It has three mounts. It has a tranny mount and two engine mm-hmm. mounts. I'm just saying, let's do the one that we need to do, because it's true that we're going to have the right now. The engine's kind of flat,
mm-hmm.
so if we lift up the driver's side mount or the windshield type side mount, it's going to tilt the engine, but that, there's really no harm, no foul.
Yeah, I guess the question to ask them is one broken? Is one, you know, is one or two more significant than the other? If that's the case, then maybe just, you know, and it's not super labor intensive or something, then maybe just address that one or two mounts. But in all reality, it is best to do them all, but that's a big price tag. So you'd probably, I mean, at that age and mileage, you might just want to live with the vibration.
Okay. All right. Well, let me ask you this. $2,000 for three mounts in the labor? You're talking about $600 a mount in labor?
Well, I mean, we don't know what the labor is.
I know, but I mean, even an engine.
It might be high.
Yeah.
Might be a little high.
I'm concerned about the price, the validity of the price. I think, what part of town do you live in?
The east side, Mesa.
Okay, call Thompson's Auto Repairs, Main and Stapley, and just say, I'd like to bring it in. Mark Salem said that I should have you take a look at my motor mounts and bid the appropriate motor mounts that I may need. That's what I would do.
Okay.
And Thompson's
Alrighty.
Auto Repair, talk to Brian or Thelma. They're good people. They're friends of mine. And I'm not saying I'm going to pay any of your bill. I'm just kind of setting the stage for them. But we need another estimate, number one, because the $2,000 is hanging in your craw, and frankly, it's got my craw too. I can't believe that we're going to put two or even, and all you have is three mounts installed. You're talking $600 for the mount and the labor.
Two of them have fluid in them.
Now that they all have fluid in them. Yeah, that's no big deal. So, okay, well, anyway, that's what I do. I go to Thompson, 602-508-0960. The lines are open, and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. If you have a car question, we still have about 15 minutes left in the show, so you're welcome to call us at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And Andy and I argue during the breaks about what's going on here, and it's good because we both have different viewpoints. Andy has been front counter for I don't know how many years. She's done front counter. She's been involved in the estimates. She's been involved in the parts. She's been involved in every aspect of the business. But I'm from the mechanical side because I never really did the books. Your mother did, and now you do. But it's the Mitsubishi issue. We talked about that during the break.
Oh, the Honda.
Yeah. I keep saying Mitsubishi because the one before. Yeah. There's three. It's going to have three engine mounts. Mm-hmm. And you're right. They might be fluid, heavy fluid, and they might be really expensive. But it's just I'm uncomfortable with the $2,000 estimate. Mm-hmm. And I wish I would have asked him, is this a shop you've patronized on a regular basis, or is this a first-time visit?
Mm-hmm.
Because that could make a difference on the pricing structure as well. And it also could be, I don't know what kind of control the shop has on their technicians, but the shop could say, we want you to bid this, Fred. And Fred goes out and he finds out that each one of the mounts pays 2 hours, but he doesn't say six, he says eight.
Mm-hmm.
And so the service writer sells an 8 hour mount when it's really a 6 hour for three mounts.
Yeah.
And so forth and so on. So when you look at the big picture, there's so many moving parts that are associated, but I'm just $2,000. And if I'm wrong next week, I will apologize my butt off that I'm wrong. But, unfortunately, what's in my heart says that's just a whole lot of money.
Yeah. And I think with any shop and any repair, something large like that, if you're facing, it's never a bad idea to just get a second opinion, get an estimate, you know.
And a lot of us, if we know what we're bidding, what did he bid? How many mounts did he have? He has three mounts and the labor. Okay, well, just give me the VIN number on your car. It won't be anything I can do right now, but I can do it today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's it.
You just got to make sure as the, you know, customer or the owner of the vehicle that you're apples to apples,
yeah.
You know, what the shop, all three mounts and all three, you know, labor and
shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax,
yeah,
all that stuff. Because I think most everybody does that, but there's still some that don't. You're shaking your head.
Yeah, and I don't think when you call around and get estimates, I don't think everyone's giving you out the door prices.
Okay.
You call a shop and ask them what a timing belt is. You're going to get five different answers because some people, you know, are going to give you timing belt plus labor only. Some people are going to give you timing belt plus water pump plus labor. Some people are going to give you timing belt, water, you know, labor.
Flush,
taxes, you know, the whole gamut. It's going to be all over the board. So you're going to find one person that's given you a very low price that's just the belt and just labor with nothing else, which is, you know.
And what we're talking about, folks, is when you take the timing belt off of a car, the water pump's staring you in the face. If it's got any kind of weeping at the what we call the weep hole, where we've got a coolant leak, a small coolant leak that no one's seen yet, we're right there. You've already paid for the labor to us to get there. So the water pump doesn't cost you $400 to go get. It's only $100 because the timing belt is right there, too. So we're going to go into one area of your engine, but why don't we do the lower hose? We have to take the hose off anyway, so let me put a new lower hose on it. You've already paid for the take off the hose and put it back on. That's part of the timing belt. There's a duplication of labor is what it's all about.
Yeah.
So that's why you're going to call around and get a whole lot of estimates. But there's plenty of people, and especially if you're a customer. Bring your car in. We do lots of estimates for customers, both before they go shop it and after they shop it.
Yeah, and I think, too, it's, you know, it's there's not a right or wrong way. I'm not saying that, but I'm just you need to ask the right questions of these shops so you know what kind of information you're getting. What does that estimate include?
Exactly.
So it's as a consumer, you need to ask those questions because every shop does it differently. We do it different than, you know, a shop down the road. So there's no right or wrong way, but you just need to ask the right questions.
And the question on this would be, time, you're going to do two mounts or three mounts and the labor, so give me an estimate for that. And how much do I have to write my check for before I leave home? But then on a timing belt, they're not going to know to ask, well, what about the water pump and the lower hose? You're right there.
Well, I would ask, does that include a water pump? Would you suggest doing a water pump? And then is there any labor overlap doing the radiator hoses at the same time? What kind of labor savings if I did them at the same time? Because it might be, you know, 2 hours if you just did the hoses by themselves. And then if you did them with a timing belt, maybe it's knocked down to a half an hour or an hour. So, you know, then you can say, okay, I'm saving $100 or whatever that dollar amount is. You know, I want to do them at the same time. So it's just kind of asking all of those questions and having the shop guide you as to what's going to save you money and what's, there's no duplication of labor and things like that.
And that's the key words, duplication of labor. Let me explain. I'm going to say how much to replace the lower hose, and it's going to give me a labor number and then the hose and the tax. We're done. But if I look and say timing belt and then replace the other lower hose, the labor to replace the other hose is 30% of what it normally would be, mm-hmm. because we've already taken everything out of the area to do the timing belt. So we're right there. It's kind of like a duplication of labor. You can't charge those, or you shouldn't charge each one of those separately. Mm-hmm. It should be, you're going in after the timing belt and I'm going to do the lower hose at the same time. Mm-hmm. And so there's a savings to my customer to mm-hmm. do that. And the technician has to be a part of that, because as he looks up those particular things, he has to be honest enough and have enough integrity to say, hey, if I do the lower hose now, it's this much more money, the hose and this. But if she waits till labor, it doubles or triples the bill because I got to dig the hose out. Mm-hmm. So those are the kinds of things. There's a couple of good shops in town I wanted to bring to your attention. If you're up at the I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto Repair is a good guy. He's been around since 1983. I've known Tom since 1983. He has ASE Master Certified Technicians. He knows right from wrong. He's an involved owner. He's there a lot. And he's a guy that is, the technicians aren't going to really pull his chain and lie to him, because Tom's smarter than that. So if you're near I-17 in Deer Valley, then Action Auto is a good guy. 38th Avenue and Indian Schools, Larry Harker's Auto, 1967 is when they first came out of the ground. They've been around a long time. Bob runs the shop, Ellen runs the front, and Jeremy is their lead tech. Between Bob and Jeremy, you have years of experience and knowledge. And those two guys have fixed cars that I have personally sent their way, because geographically the customer was in their area. But I tell the same story each time. They had an estimate for thousands of dollars to fix a water leak that was underneath the dash that was leaking on the passenger's feet. Thousands of dollars. They took it over there and I said, just give them a look and see what you think. Behind the glove box is the evaporator case for your air conditioning unit. That's the one that leaks water because it's cold inside there. That drain was filled up or blocked. So they go underneath the car and they put a vacuum cleaner on the vent, so they're sucking through that, and pretty soon they're push that thing up and it comes into the vacuum cleaner and they're done. And so they open up the drain. The bill was, I don't know, $175 to access it, and two guys working and all that kind of stuff. And the estimate was something like $2,000. Mm-hmm. And that's what happens when you get the old gray-haired guys involved. But then Jeremy doesn't have gray hair, but he's really a good technician. And that's, again, Larry Harker's Auto is a great place to go. So those are the guys that I send you to. There's other people out there. You can go to my website, marksalem.com. I have lots of shops in geographical areas that you can go look at, that you can go try, stuff like that. Most of these guys, I have their cell phone numbers. They have mine. I've known them for a very long time, and I do know, and I can vouch for that they do what it takes. Mm-hmm. I'll give you one more example, too. I met Kurt one time when a lady called me and said that she had been given an estimate for a new engine of like $5,000. I knew Kurt from, just knew him, mm-hmm. but I knew he was up in her geographical area. So I said, look, just take it over to Kurt's and see what Kurt says. Mm-hmm. So she calls me back and she says, Kurt's fixed my car for $110. And I said, well, what did he do? And she says, well, I'm not sure. I said, but it's fixed. Yes. I said, well, I'll just call Kurt and ask him. So I called him. Hey, this is Mark Salem. I sent you this customer. What'd you do? He says, well, she had an oil pressure light on, which is red. Mm-hmm. Red means stop. And she didn't stop. But, he says, to the grace of God, it wasn't because it was low oil pressure. The switch was bad. The sending unit was bad and lying about the oil. Mm-hmm. So he says, we took the sending unit out. We plugged in a gauge. We started the truck up. It had normal oil pressure at idle, and it had normal oil pressure at 70 miles an hour. So he says, we just put a new sending unit in it. The light went out. Everything's fine. Mm-hmm. He said, so we fixed it. Well, at that point, I said, you know, you got to be one of my guys because I really like the fact that you're honest, you're dependable, and everything you said makes perfect sense to me. And I really appreciate you took care of this. She was a first-time customer. Yeah, she was. So Kurtz is good. He's at I-17 and Bell Road. He's on the northeast corner. And in 1970, he opened up in 1987, and he works on both domestic and import vehicles. And he's also been in a Better Business Bureau Ethic Award winner, and that says a lot. Mm-hmm. They don't just hand that out to anybody. Yeah. So those are the kinds of guys. Any other advice? Talk about women and on the front counter.
That's just kind as of far as
what to say, what not to say. Do you?
I would just. I mean, I'm not sure about what not to say. I mean, just you know, asking questions, kind of having a grasp on with anybody. I mean, men or women, really. Just
what you don't want to do, I think, is come in and tell the shop what the other shop said. I think we need to deal with symptoms, not estimates.
Well, I think there's no problem in saying, you know, this shop thought it was, you know, X, Y, and Z, but giving symptoms, actually giving good, helpful information, what the noise is, when it happens, how to duplicate it, at what speeds, you know, as much information, something that you might think has nothing to do with the situation can lead us, you know, to find the problem very quickly. So
how often are you going to send somebody say, you know what, it's Monday mornings and Friday afternoons are obviously off the chart. We're not going to pull somebody off the floor to go take this. But if somebody comes in, man or woman, and comes in and says, I can make it happen. Mm-hmm. I just need somebody to take a ride. My question to them is how long are you going to have my person? Because I've had people take my staff for an hour. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, I got it. I can make it. No, you. So if I promise I can make it, I'm just going to take them around the block. I'm going to make two right turns and the noise will be there. Okay, fine.
And more times than not, I think for me personally, when talking to the person on the phone, if it's, you know, maybe they're struggling to describe it or pinpoint, you know, I'll ask them, can you duplicate it? Okay, well, when you come in, I'm going to have somebody ride with you just to make sure the noise that you're hearing, we hear it and we're in the same vehicle together. And, you know, it just makes it simpler that way. So I think some of that, you know, for me personally, I'll just know on the phone or even at the front counter if it's something that we should ride with them just to make sure.
Well, the big question is, can you make it happen?
Mm-hmm.
Learn how to make it happen, and then it's easier. There's been times where I fixed the problem in the car. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah.
I got a flutter. Okay, well, we got a piece of paper inside the intake on the fan motor,
mm-hmm.
and I'll just get some claws and pull that piece of paper out because I recognize the noise.
Yeah.
Those are the kinds of things. But there's lots of good shops in town. You can find my personal list at marksalem.com. Just look at best car repair shops, and they're good guys. All of us old guys pretty much have already walked the walk. And we've been around a long time, and we know right from wrong, and we find great pleasure in fixing people's cars and having people that have been customers of yours for however many years. Mm-hmm. We have 38,000, 33,000 customers that have been customers, and we're proud to say that we get new ones in, and they come back, and that kind of says a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think most everybody in our industry understands the importance of a new customer, and then the second and third visit means that we're going to get along just fine. So that's the way it is. Mark at marksalem.com is my email address. If you have a car question, I'll answer it. But give me a phone number. Sometimes I need to call you. I'll see you next Saturday.